Future Commerce is brought to you by Shopware. Shopware is an open commerce platform trusted by more than 70,000 brands to deliver the experiences that their customers need, both today and in the future. Learn more at shopware.com/FC. Future Commerce is brought to you by Recharge. In 2021, subscription merchants saw higher AOV, LTV, and MRR than ever before. That's average order value, lifetime value, monthly recurring revenue. Do you want to learn how you can do this too? Well, you can by learning those key strategies that the top brands use to scale their business. You can get that all in Recharge's free State of Subscription Commerce report. It's available at rechargepayments.com/futurecommerce. That's rechargepayments.com/futurecommerce. ListTrack is proud to sponsor Future Commerce. ListTrack is a unified digital marketing platform with a data-first approach. Retailers like Vineyard Vines, Tula Skincare, and Travis Matthew trust ListTrack to boost customer engagement and drive e-commerce revenue. Discover more at listtrack.com/futurecommerce. That's listtrack.com/futurecommerce. Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about the next generation of commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And all experiences are homogenous and non-remarkable.
Yeah, that's the way to kick this off.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's so true.
What? Shopify's down 75% right now?
I think that's the number. It might be worse by the time you listen to this. But it's not just Shopify.
Okay.
It's a lot
that
of
was,
things.
That was picking on those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to come for the king, you better not miss.
That was a lot of correlation right there.
Shopify actually this week has a number of announcements, and we'll get to it. If you look over the past month, maybe Shopify is future-proofing its business in a bunch of different ways. So we'll actually kind of break down some of the news. But one thing I really wanted us to cover, because I'm feeling very like passionate about it right now, is that there is just a homogenization of e-commerce experience today. Everything looks the same. It behaves the same. It's not just the aesthetic. It's the functionality. Like, the web used to be fun, and the web used to be off kilter, and that's because you couldn't just click and start something up from scratch.
Yeah. Like, it got too efficient to do anything differentiated.
And that's a problem. Right?
It is.
I say this all the time, Brian.
People don't invest what they don't have to. You know what I mean?
Oh, gosh. Ooh.
Yeah.
Say more.
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, okay. In the past, we had to spend a lot of money on e-commerce experiences because you literally had to. So you build something that was really cool because you had to build something that was from scratch. Not from scratch, but it was...
I mean, effectively from scratch. Effectively from scratch.
So now, like, marketers and IT people and whatever buying center are like, oh, we don't have to spend money on this, and we can still sell things online. Why would we try to go do something custom? Like, we don't have to spend money on it.
And if you're listening to this podcast, you already know all of these things. But I think that in particular, when you're putting it in the context of the markets are not just timid on the future of e-commerce experiences and the platforms that power them. I mean, big commerce itself is trading at something like $15 a share or something right now. It's not just that the market has cooled on it or that there are headwinds. The market is actively, and investors are actively saying, there's warning signals ahead that in fact we've become too efficient. And the consumer, if they want bland, homogenous experiences, why not just use Amazon?
Right.
Because it works.
Yes.
You know you're going to get fast, cheap, and free.
To be fair, even Amazon's taken its share of beating right now.
Oh, for sure.
But I think you're right. Like,
but Amazon's business is so diversified. It's so much further beyond, you know, just marketplace, right?
Right.
And I think we had covered this some time ago. If you're not, you know, listening to every episode of Future Commerce, super easy to miss. But the buy with Prime, you know, one-click button.
We talked about this with Chris Gosser significantly.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, they are future-proofing their business to some degree as well. Who does the buy with Prime feature, like this idea that you can have a one-click checkout on any website, but it's fulfilled with the logistics of Amazon, who does that target? Who is the buyer of buy with Prime? The non-Shopify set.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And that's why I believe...
Well...
Okay.
Currently, I think, does it include the Shopify set? I think currently you can use Buy with Prime on Shopify as of the time that...
This is the question.
I don't know, actually. I don't know the answer to that.
I would surmise that Buy with Prime would be against Shopify's terms of service.
Probably.
Because you are implementing a payment method that doesn't go through Shopify checkout. That's what I assume, and there are probably people here...
No, but you can use Apple Pay on...
That is through Shopify checkout. You have to get to the Shopify checkout before you can use Apple Pay. Shopify is going to get its cut, right? Buy with
right.
Prime is not a Shopify certified
No, but you
checkout
can use another payment platform on top of Shopify. You just have to pay a fee.
that's very hand wavy.
Yes.
Basically, nobody does it.
Right.
Right. Because
yes.
So let's get back to the hypothesis.
Yes.
I want to like future cast just a little bit.
Oh, I love the future cast.
So we're in right now. Actually, we're sitting in a room that we're not supposed to be in at at Rice 2022. We're at the Retail Innovation Conference and Expo.
Live yeah, from Rice.
If it's a little echoey, that's why. But we don't have a full recap of the show this week. This is our first day on the show floor. We have a whole team from Future Commerce here at the show this week. So
this
we're going to have a very comprehensive show recap, likely on next week's show. But this is happening right now. And I think that as we're sort of in this moment where I think we've seen the bottom sort of fall out of the direct-to-consumer era. We're now in the indirect-to-consumer era. And now we're watching...
Dude.
Yeah. And indirect-to-consumer means it's not direct-to-consumer at all. It's going through all the traditional channels. It's in Walmart and Target. It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
Like We talked about this
when we talked to Ingrid at Shop Talk. We talked about this with Chris Gosser.
Yes, we continue to talk about it.
The expansion path is unique distribution.
Beyond e-commerce.
Yeah.
And why? Because, and we say this a lot, and you've probably heard me say it before, but I'm going to say it again. It's that e-commerce, the original value proposition of e-commerce is you don't need a brick and mortar store. You don't need to staff a brick and mortar store. Your store can be online 24 hours a day. You don't need to heat or cool or have insurance or hold inventory in the same traditional manner. You don't have to have product merchandising on the show floor in the store. You don't have to have a front window display. You have digital equivalents of all of those things. But what you are reducing is the middleman, right? You are reducing the layers between the product and the consumer. And what we have found, that was the promise. That is not where we are today. And in fact, it's not the removing of middlemen. E-commerce is nothing but middlemen now. And there's an entire show on the other side of this wall right now with 600 vendors that are all middlemen of some sort that will do something in your value chain to get a product to your customer from your digital storefront. It is actually the most expensive.
70% of your e-commerce experience is powered by other vendors.
I don't know that we've quantified
that way. Okay, fine.
What I said right.
was a vast generalization.
Yeah.
Probably, likely, it's possible.
On some sites.
Yes.
I'm feeling very punchy right now. What I have said is that up to 30% of a product detail page is real estate that is owned by other e-commerce experiences that are not from the brand itself. It's UGC, it's, you know,
right.
product catalog.
You may also
it's,
like.
Right. It's product recommendations.
Yeah.
It's even your buy button. It's your one-click checkout.
This isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No, but I think it's an important distinction to say that there are so many layers of technology in the unbundling of Amazon and whatever else has occurred that have taken us away from the original premise of the value of e-commerce. Okay, so the market understands this now. So it's no longer e-commerce. It's not e-com anymore. It's not electronic commerce. E-com now means electronic commodity. Because you can stand up. I'm very proud of myself for that.
No, I love it.
You can stand up a site in mere minutes and merchandise products in mere minutes. And where is the value in something that requires no thought, no intention, and no hard work to actually bring it into being? That is a commodity. Anyone can produce it.
Yeah.
And if that, I know that we came through an era of a decade of the differentiator is brand. But look at what's happened to all the direct-to-consumer brands that were differentiating
on
brand.
They all feel the same.
They all feel the same.
Yeah.
They all have a similar aesthetic. There are some standouts. I think we argued about this on the last show. There are some standouts.
No, but here's the thing. No one is implementing dork mode.
And dork mode, define dork mode.
Dork mode was an article written by Alex Greifeld, published on Future Commerce Insiders. And it talked about how dork mode was the antidote to the sea of sameness. We have a ton of brands out there that have all built these broad market experiences. And they could be identifying customers that have spent, you know, that have made 4, 5, 6 purchases with them mm-hmm. and build a unique experience for their most nerded out customers or different customer segments and have not just one broad market e-commerce experience, but maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, depending on how many different buyers they have that meet and address those buyers' unique aesthetics or needs, or just gives them something different other than the blandification that we have at this moment.
Blandification. And it's not just the products themselves that, you know, I think Ben Schott.
Yeah, Ben Schott.
Ben Schott.
The blanding article, yeah.
Right, had said that, you know, are bland. It's that the experiences by which we deliver them to the customer.
Right, it's not just the brand. It's the experiences that are built on these out-of-the-box platforms.
And that's the challenge is that what Shopify has done is so remarkable in that it has, you know, quote unquote, democratized e-commerce and that anyone can be an e-commerce merchant.
Which is amazing. That is amazing.
Objectively incredible.
Wonderful. And Amazon too. Same thing. Like,
but it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
Because what they have done is they've made it so easy and so thoughtless, I would say, in aggregate. I think there are many brands that are not thoughtless. But I would say that it's so easy to stand up a theme and stand up a site that, you know, looks very similar to another. They've actually turned the business buyer, right, the operator or the founder, into a consumer.
Right.
In their own right.
Yes.
So they made the business buyer of e-commerce software care about fast, cheap, and free in the same way that Amazon made an e-commerce shopper care about fast, cheap, and free. In fact, Shopify basically primified e-commerce software acquisition. One click. So, like, think about this,
totally.
Right? Like,
absolutely agree.
You can one click install with no commitment at all for a whole array of software, not just Shopify, but an entire marketplace.
Yeah, it's almost always
ecosystem.
Try before you buy. It's almost always one click install, unless it's a real hefty tool and then there's a little bit of integration involved, but it's pretty minimal.
I don't know if you had read my insider's piece from this past week.
Yes, I did.
So it was a little bit of a hot one.
Hot one is
it's
right.
It's called Wellness Brands, the New Pornographers, which is a whole take unto itself. We'll link it up in the show notes. I make a pretty decent case that, you know, the thesis here is that we have often referred to porn as being early entrance into new technology platforms and finding novel uses for it, and that actually easing the consumer application or the consumer adoption curve. This is something that's been written about for decades. It's not a novel thought. Wellness brands do the same for e-commerce software. They're highly experimental.
Yes.
They're very quick to adopt. They like to trial. They exhibit sampling behavior, and we actually give a lot of data-driven supportive evidence of that hypothesis. It's a great piece, 2,000 words, you know, carve out some time and make a cup of coffee to read it. But in that piece, I basically hypothesized that the smaller, more nascent software as a service vendors are the ones that are low cost and easy to implement through one click on Shopify. They are also, by our own primary research, way more likely, up to 50% more likely, than to include a wellness brand on their homepage as a case study.
Right.
And this is a really interesting behavior because most of these products are month to month and require no long-term commitment or a contract. And so this like fleeting tryst that a brand that's highly experimental might have with their software vendor also, I think, is devaluing to the brand. It doesn't require them to commit to anything for a long period of time, which is great as a value prop, but not great for requiring someone to have to really think and work hard
right.
to implement something.
Right. And become, it's more like just put it on your site, see if it starts performing.
It. Yeah.
And if it doesn't perform, you get rid of it. And that's like not strategy.
No. And 90, I would say like I shouldn't say 90%. A lot of my Twitter feed.
We're
throwing
today.
Out so many stats, you guys. I'm so sorry. But we're all fired up because Rice is actually quite a good conference, and we'll break it all down.
Yes,
but,
this is a great conference.
Yeah, we'll break it all down. But what I'm witnessing is that a lot of my Twitter feed are people of the Shopify variety who are constantly asking. There's two conversations being had. One, what Shopify plugins do you use? And two,
yes.
Here are the top 10 Shopify plugins you should use.
Oh my gosh, isn't that, that's 90% of the content on your Twitter stream.
And that's where, that's again, so unbelievably reductive. And I'm sure that like, someone could probably say that is just one, like first of all, that is one subjective experience of
they also
a,
might say,
of a conversation.
You need to re-curate your Twitter feed.
I probably do need to do that. I actually like the mix that I have at the moment. My concern though is that how much, when that is the, you know, when that is an engagement strategy, because that gets a lot of engagement, right? What does that say about the consumerification, right? Right, the consumerification of e-commerce software.
Well, here's an interesting point. I think you nailed it. Shopify did this, and they did it because they actually like really, especially early on, and obviously they've gone up market, but they've really initially went after the single owner operator, which is to think about things more like a consumer actually.
Yeah.
You know,
well, they exhibit consumer behavior because they are solo consumer.
Correct.
Right, founders.
Correct.
Right.
They are the judge, jury, and executioner of their entire business strategy. So naturally, it made sense to build something that catered to effectively what was a consumer.
And there's so much demand there, and they built really an incredible business. My concern is that this, and this is going to be a topic of our report, our forthcoming visions report, which should be out in about 2 to 3 weeks. This homogenization of experiences has really kind of made online shopping just more boring over time.
I mean, I wrote about this extensively.
Yeah. During Black Friday. A couple years ago.
Yeah, two Black Fridays ago, Black Friday Abad, which I believe that e-commerce shopping is one of the most depressing forms of shopping. It is. No, I'm
this is like our whole job. Thank
dead,
you, Brian.
Dead serious. Yeah. I think it's... It's like we watched that movie Jasper Mall,
yeah,
which was like this supposed to be this look at like
a dying mall. It's a documentary about a dying mall in Jasper, Alabama.
Right, and it's this sad look at this mall. It was really depressing, and I look at that and I'm like, man, I kind of hope that like I'm an old person walking around a dying mall and not an old person sort of half looking at Netflix, half looking at my shopping feed by myself, not paying attention to anyone else when I shop.
Right. Hey, merchants, are you struggling?
Are you struggling to provide an engaging experience to your customers because of the limitations of your current e-commerce platform? Or maybe do your merchandising and operations teams feel limited because they're experiencing friction and they're drowning in information overload, and there's so much opportunity cost that's traded away because of repetitive work simply because you're working with a system that doesn't adapt to your needs? Or maybe everything just needs to be built from scratch. If so, Future Commerce wants to introduce you to Shopware. Shopware is an open commerce platform that's trusted by more than 70,000 brands to deliver the experiences their customers need, both today and in the future. Learn more today at shopware.com/FC. That's shopware.com/FC. Future Commerce is brought to you by Recharge. The subscription commerce market has shifted dramatically in the last couple of years, especially since 2020. In fact, last year alone, in 2021, subscription merchants saw higher average order value, lifetime value, and monthly recurring revenue than ever before. Are you ready for the latest insights and best practices on subscription merchants? You can learn how your brand stacks up against others of your same size and vertical by downloading Recharge's free State of Subscription Commerce report. You can get that report today free of charge from Recharge Payments at rechargepayments.com/futurecommerce. That's rechargepayments.com/futurecommerce. We're proud to be partnered with ListTrack here at Future Commerce, and I have a question for you. Do you ever have a social media influencer who sends traffic to your website? If the answer is yes, then you can turn that influence into guaranteed e-commerce revenue. How are you going to do that? Well, with ListTrack. ListTrack has a unified marketing platform that allows a brand to easily capture customer data from influencer-driven traffic. And then you can use that data to personalize the customer experience for better conversion and higher sales. You can get all of this today and put that influencer strategy to work by going to listtrack.com/futurecommerce. That's ListTrack with a K, listtrack.com/futurecommerce.
Part of our primary research for our visions report is that we're seeing that if you remove the navigation from a website, right? So we created in the survey, one of the questions in the survey is a visual treatment that shows multiple like bedding brands next to each other at varying levels of basically low-end consumer commodity or like a store brand and a marketplace offering and then a luxury brand. And if you remove the top navigation, which contains branding, most consumers can't tell the difference of which one is the more premium brand. And that's because the visual language of e-commerce is so standardized that there's no character and no effectively brand or experience that can shine through.
Right, exactly.
And just to make it like really specific, left-hand navigation, grid layout, white background, right?
Yep.
We have close-up texture shots and a lifestyle shot. And
the prestige theme.
Exactly, it's the prestige theme, right?
Yeah.
This is not a teardown of Shopify or a justification to why Shopify's stock price might have taken a tumble. By the way, the whole of the tech sector is suffering in that regard. The challenge is that we're now starting to notice that maybe things like headless aren't the bastion or the savior of e-commerce for the reason that
we initially thought they would be. Yeah, totally.
It's not because of the technology or how fast the experience and the browse experience could be. It's not because you have, you know, this total control. It's because enforces upon you intentionality to have to think about every design decision because you are forced to build it from scratch. That is a thing that we don't enforce on our brands or as operators enforce upon our yes. companies when you can just apply the prestige theme and right. begin modifying.
Right. Effectively, headless is our savior because it forces us to think and be intentional and think about what actually yeah. matters to our customers.
Call every decision into question and take yes. nothing for granted.
Right.
But I would reframe.
Is probably why there are some horror stories out there of implementing headless. I mean, let alone the yeah. technological issues, but like
the that, business if is you're not prepared.
Correct.
For
it's
that.
A cultural issue.
Right.
Because if you don't know how to make good, decisive decisions and you don't have the data that you need to make those decisions, yeah, you're going to fail at headless.
Yeah.
Because if you get stuck in analysis paralysis, headless is going to cost you a crap yeah. ton of money.
Yeah. And time. I mean, that's the
yes.
most expensive
Focus.
Thing. And I am like, listen, I have been sort of juries out on headless for a long time.
Yeah.
But I do believe
well, the jury's in.
No, I would never say that headless is our savior in any way. I think having a financial and a technological boundary that requires you to have to become intentional is the thing that could that I believe could be the differentiator for many brands that adopt headless. That's the thing that we're missing, is it's taking time out to rethink the way that your site exhibits your brand and how consumers really might be pleasantly surprised and how you can introduce good friction into
yes.
making people stop and think
yes.
about the purchase that they're making and not just go on autopilot when they start seeing the grid.
Which, by the way, you could do this with any one of the e-commerce
yes.
platforms we just mentioned
exactly.
without going headless, but you won't.
No, you won't.
No one will because they don't have
to. Because you don't have to. And you listen, we're all the same, right? In that regard, I think we do things that we have to do when we have to do them and not necessarily before.
Right.
And this is that consumer behavior that I think we're witnessing and is at play. Now, I haven't dug into, and this is the thing that, sort of speaking out of ignorance now and just sort of examining the moment in Shopify, just looking at a stock price number tells absolutely no story. There are some really interesting developments. So Shopify, in the last month alone, has acquired an influencer management platform, right, called Dovetail.
Right.
They have announced that they're building way more capabilities for NFT and their NFT working group. I believe they have a giant Web3 roadmap that they're implementing at the moment. They have acquired, there are rumblings of an acquisition in progress for Deliver, which would give them extensive 3PL capabilities.
That happened, right?
I'm not sure if it actually happened.
I think it actually happened.
Did it?
Yeah.
I've double check me on that.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I saw the leak and not necessarily the press release. And then just today, I believe, they announced a new product. Called Shopify Audiences. I don't think that we have covered this in the census just yet.
Nope.
What?
Oh, no, it had. Shopify 2 acquired Deliver for $2.1 billion.
Okay, so there's...
That's on their website.
Okay, all right. So it has been announced. Well, that's a lot of K.
That's a lot of K.
And then yesterday, and we haven't covered this just yet, so this is our, first blush opinions here. But if Shopify were to implement this audiences feature, it firmly positions them in the realm of customer acquisition. So have you heard of audiences, Brian?
Briefly. I just heard that it was announced. So it's basically a search to improve brand rediscovery?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what they're doing is creating effectively, how Facebook... advertising relied very heavily on lookalike audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Shopify is really looking to create I think, the beginnings of what will become an advertising platform that will allow Shopify to broker the introduction of new brands to consumers that might fit into similar consumer segments.
I see. So basically, Shopify merchants will be able to advertise through other Shopify merchants?
That's correct.
Yeah. So that's absolutely genius.
Yeah. And these are things
that... It's
even
better than a marketplace in some ways.
Because yeah, I mean, that was the thing for years. People were like, why doesn't Shopify launch a marketplace? Right. Why isn't the Shop app, you know, a shoppable marketplace for people? Well, it kind of is to some degree. Yeah. But, you know, why isn't it a place that, like, it's just Amazon? Like, I should be able to shop every brand.
Right.
Well, because then you, like, Shopify becomes, you know, the arbiter of merchandising, you know, the millions of stores on its platform and understanding, you know, the value prop of all of these products. Like, that is a fundamentally different business to their software platform business that they're on today.
Yeah, well, I mean,
so an advertising model makes so much more sense.
It does. It does make more sense to start. I mean, I don't think I would rule out them growing out a marketplace
at some
point. Oh, I'm sure
10 years from now, there's likely something on the roadmap.
Yeah.
I find the... You know, the roadmap that they're laying out and this, you know, this last month of activity to be something that's like, okay, well, it's not all doom and gloom for Shopify for the next, you know, 5 years. I feel like they're, if anyone is, you know, poised to defend the crown, Shopify is going to be hard to beat.
Oh, yeah. And again, I think you said this earlier, we're not actually dumping on Shopify. What Shopify has created is incredible and worthwhile and was necessary.
Yeah.
Needed
and the door was left wide open by, you know, basically entrenched players who abdicated the throne.
Right.
You know?
Totally.
I mean, there are a number of e-commerce platforms that held the crown for so many years.
Well, and maybe they didn't, like... They held the crown. The crown, though, their crown that they held wasn't actually the crown that they thought it was. It was a different crown. I know that was complicated.
Don't say crown anymore.
My point in saying that is, like, they were platforms built for a different kind of merchant, one that was more upmarket, like Shopify.
More sophisticated.
More sophisticated, exactly. And so they held the crown with the smaller merchants because there were literally no other options that made sense for them.
So this is in no way like a lament for Shopify. I think, you know, they have a really tough few years ahead of them. I think we all do to some degree.
Shopify-abad. Is that where we're at already?
The tech sector in particular, I think, is going to, has taken some beatings, and we'll see what happens here in the second half of 2022. But I don't think that Shopify as a concept and what it enables with a consumer is something that can be fixed in the short term or even in the medium term. The thing that it enables with the merchant consumer is fast, cheap, and free. And the fast, cheap, and freeness of e-commerce has gotten us to where we are, mm-hmm. where the world is effective. The e-commerce world is effectively very boring. And there are brands that have to work really, really hard and spend a lot of money and put a lot of resource into design to break out of that mold. But they are by far the very, very small minority amongst the larger footprint of what Shopify is.
Right. Yeah, I think that it's interesting, like we talked about dork mode. Dork mode requires an incredible level of sophistication
yes.
to implement.
Yeah.
If you did it on Shopify and you wanted to run things from a single backend, you'd have to do all kinds of backend integrations and magic to make it happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we talk about these next level strategies to differentiate. They cost money.
Yeah.
They're not doing headless is something that's going to be an investment that your brand has to make. And I think that's what we've stepped away from. That's what this has enabled is e-com isn't actually getting investment. Or maybe that investment is going towards all these additional middle tools.
I think that's what it is. Like each one of these middlemen are margin erosive.
Yeah.
Right? So the margins wither away. And really the challenge here, the bigger challenge, like the big elephant in the room that I think Shopify is trying to fix or plan for is, well, how do you get people on your website anyway? Mm-hmm. Right? Experiential websites aren't really going to differentiate themselves through like massive amounts of SEO.
Right. Right. So traffic.
The traffic problem is the universal problem to have to solve. Is that it's not just about standing out in a sea of sameness.
Right.
Because I think that that's important. But how do you stand out if no one ever gets to your site in the first place?
Right.
So you know where the investment has been going. Yeah, it is a separate problem.
Yeah, CAC is so high.
But this is the issue. If you're looking as if you have a brand and you have and you know, what did the venture era of direct-to-consumer do? Well,
pushed all the budgets to CAC.
Yeah, it pushed it. It really, a lot of venture went to, you know, lining, you know, Facebook's coffers.
Yeah.
Right. So the next era here is going to be about, you know, really just acquisition arbitrage. I heard an interesting one today. So I hosted a panel with Couplet Coffee's founder Geffen, who she's a amazing Twitter. I know her from Twitter. Never met her in person until today.
Nice.
But I hosted this panel, and then I'll talk about the panel some other time. But one thing she had said is like unusual acquisition methods is, well, coffee, especially specialty coffee, people are really experimental. Mm-hmm. And they want to try a bunch of different things, and they don't necessarily want to have one thing on autopilot all the time. And so, you know, being top of mind for when they do want to reorder is really important. How do you do that without spending a lot of money on paid search or on retargeting? For Geffen, it was, well, we just need a really freaking cool fridge magnet. You know, like...
Yeah.
Just having, occupying some space. I had another person that I was having a conversation with, and a light bulb went off for me. And it was basically the context of the conversation is your package is really important. If you can design your package in a way that inspires someone to take a photo, then all of the machine learning algorithms will bring them back to the product on your behalf without you ever having to spend any money. Because we all have memories that pop up. We have time hop. We have things
totally.
That will bring your brand back to them. If you're in the camera role, then you're going to be in their memories forever. It's figuring out how to differentiate yourself enough so that you're worthy of having a picture taken. And I think that these are new ways of thinking of customer acquisition that, you know, aren't just how do we create new creative, how do we create 40, you know, ad targeting strategies, how do we launch them and weed out the poor performers? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I mean...
Not that those things aren't important.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if, like, being in someone's photos is acquisition so much as it is retention.
It's retention. No, yeah.
But I agree with you. There are, like, acquisition continues to be something that, you know, where... I mean, this is everything we just talked about the last few episodes. Mm-hmm. It's like... How are people coming into the funnel without having to drop a boatload on Facebook? Maybe it's local commerce. This is something that, you know, that is coming up that, mm-hmm. that we're going to be talking about more in the coming year. And how to navigate local commerce. I was just talking to a friend of ours who has a coffee brand, and he just, he's about to get his first physical cafe.
Oh, is this Joe?
It's Joe, yeah.
You should, we should give him some love. Joe from Klaviyo, he's has a direct-to-consumer brand, Springline Coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, Springline is great. I love Springline.
Yeah, Springline's delicious. But he was just talking about how, you know, he went through the process of joining his local chamber of commerce. And, you know, and talking to like the city council and like going through this process of engaging in actual relationships in his community. Maybe that's the next step is like, we've seen so much talk about how to go do things, in the digital world,
global digital reach, right?
Stuff that just scales naturally.
Yeah.
But what if, like, maybe scale is actually better accomplished and more sticky if it's done at the local level through normal relationships with people that care about each other in their communities?
We on that point, actually, we have a series coming up that we'll be working on over the next 5 or 6 months that really examines this phenomenon. We don't have analogs in the digital world for the things that actually power a lot of local business in the real world. And I find that to be really interesting. Like we, you know, you deal with the local downtown development agency. You have to deal with yep. the Chamber of Commerce, like you mentioned. You have yep. to deal with the city redevelopment agency.
Yes.
And, like, you have to deal with each of these, you know, small governmental organizations and paragovernmental organizations that actually, like, gatekeep whether you can even be in your town, in your local city. And I think demystifying each of the roles that these things play in your life and how really just kind of like educating people on how business is really done in real life, I think will help us to understand where the deficiencies are right now in e-commerce.
Oh my gosh, I was just thinking about something as you were talking, and I started thinking about digital equivalents of some of the stuff that we have in our local towns. How cool would it be if digital communities, which are not obviously not physically location bound, but come together around specific, whatever, actually, it could be anything. what if there was like standards for the types of experiences that those communities would allow into their bubbles? So like you had to adhere to a specific design aesthetic to be posted as an option for that community to go buy things. Like, yeah. you know, in towns, so like there's certain towns that will require you to build your building in a specific style.
I understand.
Yeah, architectural
I understand.
Style.
Yes, it's, yeah. that's actually like the fundamental role that a city planner,
yeah.
you know, and a town planner yeah. Might exercise. This is really interesting. It reminds me actually of, you know, the old web ring days where there were, you know, affiliations of websites that all worked together in
yeah.
like loosely coupled, you know, way for them to partner to help grow. And a lot of those were like informational sites or like, you know, GeoCities type
right.
sites.
Yeah,
you know?
I was thinking GeoCities. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
StumbleUpon had a really interesting mechanism for this too. And, you know, a decade ago where, you know, you wanted to find a site just like this one that is very close, you know, closely aligned or has a similar visual aesthetic. StumbleUpon would like aggregate similar sites into digital neighborhoods.
Yeah.
We lack a lot of that. And I think just awareness of what the mechanisms are that make business happen in real life would help us all rethink the way that we're building the web today and maybe make us feel a little less disconnected and more interconnected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm like vision casting here, but wouldn't it be cool if like Reddit allowed for communities to build experiences that were a part of that specific Reddit
yeah.
community? And then that could be stores or it could be additional sites or information about a specific yeah. community. Instead of things being defined around specific platform features, it was more open and allowed it for building as long as it met the guidelines of that community.
I think that's a brilliant last word. I will say this, the founder of Visa, I think it was Dan Hawk, this is off the cuff, I should probably have referenced it, said that basically any community that exists solely, right, for capital purposes, meaning any community that exists solely for, you know, financial gain,
yeah,
it will not be a community,
successful.
Right?
Agreed.
It's not because
agreed.
You have to be, yeah. You know, what we might have said in a prior to was like, you have to be about something. You have
right.
to be about something more. No, I think that being able to engage in a community that has, you know, no tangible benefit other than to be. Is something that we're desperately needing and lacking in our modern world.
Yeah.
We're like closer than ever, but we've never been further apart.
Yeah, that's why yeah. I don't want to be old and scrolling through my phone while I passively watch Emily in Paris as a rerun.
On that note, if you want more episodes of this podcast, you can get them at futurecommerce.fm. We would really appreciate, it takes you no time at all, but if you want to support the podcast, we would really appreciate if you could drop us a rating on Apple Podcasts. And Spotify actually requires you to listen to an episode or two before you drop a rating. Or three. You have to listen to a lot.
I don't even know how many.
Quite a bit before you can leave a rating, but we would really appreciate it if you did so. We are coming up quick on our newest report. If you want to know, be among the first to know when it lands, it's an impressive an impressive assemblage of amazing minds, incredible experts, and empathetic thinkers who are coming together to help us to build it. And
my
I can't
gosh.
Wait to show it to you. You can get that by subscribing, actually, to Future Commerce at futurecommerce.fm/subscribe, and you'll be the first to know when the report becomes available in the next few weeks. It's called Visions, and we are very, very excited about it.
You caught that, right? It used to be called Vision. Now it's called Visions.
Yeah. Vision was a annual trends report.
Yes.
Visions is a home for our biggest ideas. And I'm really excited about the future of all of that. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to Future Commerce.